You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The 19th century English mathematician Charles Dodson published works with titles like Notes on the First Two Books of Euclid and An Elementary Treatise on Determinants with Their Application to Simultaneous Linear Equations and Algebraical Geometry. But he's not known today for his contributions to mathematics, rather for a children's book called Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, which he wrote under the pseudonym Lewis Carroll. He and a host of other famous pseudonymous writers, like the Georges, George Eliot, George Sand, and George Orwell, are the subject of Carmela Chiraro's new book called Non the Plume, A Secret History of Pseudonyms. It's published by HarperCollins, and I'm very pleased that it brings Ms. Chiraro to our show today. Welcome.
Thank you, Leonard.
You begin by looking at the Bronte sisters, Anne, Charlotte, and Emily. What names did they go by when they were first published?
Well, they went by, they used the first initials of their actual names. So Anne, Charlotte, and Emily Bronte were Acton, Kerr, and Ellis Bell, which is, of course, gender neutral, but suggests a male writer.
And was that because they might not have been published if they had written as women?
Yeah, I mean, they really, like Eliot, had a distaste for what they considered silly or frivolous women's novels, and they wanted their books to be taken on their own terms, and so that's why they adopted pen names.
Well, there are men who, or there are people anyway, who claim that they can always tell whether a writer was a man or a woman. Did anybody wonder whether they were women writing these books? Because they do come across today as women's novels.
I agree. It really tripped people up because, you know, some people said of Jane Eyre, well, the writing is too good to be a woman's. It can't be a woman's. And then other people said, well, these details about upholstery, you know, have to have been a woman. And I think, yeah, they read as novels by women, but I think certainly George Eliot, her book is quote-unquote sort of male. I don't know that you could tell that that was a woman writer.
Well, so Jane Austen was too good a writer to be a woman too, wasn't she? If the critics had known for sure that these books were written by women, would that have changed their opinions?
I think so. I mean, once Charlotte Bronte was even, you know, suspected to have written her fiction, she was criticized for it. And, with Eliot, some critics said, if it is by a man, it is, you know, very good, very impressive. If this has been written by a woman, it's a disgrace.
Oh.
That's a double standard.
Well, she's turned out to
she
be
did
pretty
okay.
respected since.
She did okay for herself.
Now, other women who assumed pseudonyms are still known by their noms de plume, like George Eliot. Why not the Bronte sisters?
I've been asked that a few times, and I thought about it, and it's interesting. Eliot wanted to inhabit her pseudonym in the way that the Brontes didn't need to. As Marianne Evans, she was living with a married man, and she was called immoral, and she had taken this woman's husband, and so she really wanted to shed her former identity and become George Eliot.
Well, she wasn't called George by her friends, was she?
No, she wasn't. But
you still
I think
call
it
her
was,
Marion.
Yeah, I think it was more about her sense of self and why that pseudonym endured versus Currer Bell.
Well, didn't Sylvia Plath originally publish The Bell Jar under a pseudonym?
She did. She wrote that as Victoria Lucas, and that reason was very clear. You know, some motives were kind of murky. In this case, it was very simply that she, you know, this novel was highly autobiographical about her mental breakdowns and her homicidal feelings toward her mother. To whom she was very close.
But it was a novel. Novelists always say, well, I just made it up.
Right. I mean, this would so closely track the events of her own life that, you know, that would have been impossible. And this Mrs. Greenwood was really just like Aurelia Plath. And so as she was kind of, you know, being very vague with her mother about what she was working on, she was telling friends that she had done this novel. And when it came out, she got one positive review, and she said to a friend, you know, I actually wrote this book. So, you know, she wanted to, you know, claim the praise.
So when did it start being published under her own name?
That was actually posthumously. She died 28 days after the book was published. Well, she killed herself 28 days after the book came out. So she didn't live to see it published under her own name.
Now, in the case of these women writers who wrote under male names, we kind of understand why they might be forced to in the 19th century anyway. But there were also men who were writing under pseudonyms. Well, first, let's talk a bit about some of the women. How did Marion Evans even come up with the name George Eliot?
George came from her partner, the man she called her husband, George Henry Lewes. And Eliot, she said, was a good mouth-filling word. She just liked Eliot. So that's how she came up with the name.
Did some of the other people come up with pseudonyms because they had careers in other areas?
Yeah, Lewis Carroll, of course, was a mathematician at Oxford, and he also happened to hate fame, and he wanted to keep his lives separate.
Had he written Alice's Adventures in Wonderland with the intention of publishing it?
No, he actually gave it to Alice Liddell, the girl he had a close friendship with. Some of the stories behind the unmasking of these pseudonyms are really kind of funny. I mean, Eliot came out to her publisher the publisher came to visit the house one day, and George Lew said, "Would you like to meet George Eliot?" But he came in with her into the room, and the publisher said, "Oh, yes, very much." And so George Eliot left the room and came right back. And she said, "I'm George Eliot," so it was kind of funny.
And the world, the earth didn't open up and...
No, I mean, she was...
Was it then known by the general public?
It was known by some of the public. I mean, she just wouldn't acknowledge it. And the funny thing is that she was considered very scandalous and called immoral. But then as she became more and more of a best-selling author, she just was really loved by the country and kind of accepted.
What about Charles Dodson? We know now that he was a kind of closeted pedophile. Do you think that's one of the reasons he wrote Alice under a pseudonym?
I'm actually not sure about the pedophile thing. I mean, I think there are different thoughts on that, but certainly he did have feelings of shame around, his relationships with children. But I don't know. I'm not entirely convinced of the pedophile thing. But in any case, I think it was really just that he wanted to keep his life separate, and he didn't want people coming up to him and talking about Alice in Wonderland because that wasn't. That he wanted to keep his life private.
And how did he come up with the name Lewis Carroll?
It's actually based on the Latin for his own name, the Latin words for his own name. So that's how he came up with that.
In the case of Samuel Clemens, the name Mark Twain, that comes from his experiences on the riverboats?
Yes, it does. Although he told different stories about how he got his pen name. And as some biographies have indicated, the Mark Twain represented this other side of his personality because Samuel Clemens was a much darker figure than he let on to the public.
And how far into his career did Samuel Clemens start writing as Mark Twain?
It was actually pretty early on. It was when he was a humorist for a newspaper. And in fact, pen names were kind of a convention for humorists of that era. So it was just something that was done in a playful way.
In his case, you get the feeling that at a certain point, he just became Mark Twain.
Yes. Yeah, he did. And he loved being a literary celebrity. He's been called, the world's first literary rock star. And at the same time, he felt badgered by fame and, really troubled by it.
Well, Charles Dickens didn't change his name.
No.
Did any of the other authors you researched ever stop using their real names altogether and just use their nom de plume full time?
That happened in certain instances. I mean, some writers just started signing off as their pen name, like George Orwell. Romain Gary, the French writer, really inhabited his pseudonym.
Anatole France won a Nobel Prize as Anatole France.
No, I didn't. I didn't know that.
That wasn't his real name. What about something like the great short story writer O. Henry?
Well, sorry.
No, how did he come up with that name? Yeah. Was he influenced by a candy bar?
He said that it wasn't to do with the candy bar, but he did tell many different stories about how that pen name came about. He was kind of given to embellishing his story constantly. But he was a convicted con man. He had been sent to prison for bank fraud and very much wanted to get away from, William Sidney Porter, his former self, and kind of start over.
My guest is Carmela Ciuraru, C-I-U-R-A-R-U. Her book, Nom de Plume, A Secret History of Pseudonyms, is published by Harper. With a name like Ciuraru, some people might think about assuming another name. Because I'm sure most readers find it very hard to pronounce it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, sure. Definitely.
Your book focuses not only on the pseudonymous writers, but also you mentioned heteronyms. What's the difference between a pseudonym and a heteronym?
Well, you know, you could say that a pseudonym expresses a kind of an aspect of yourself that you want to draw out. And heteronyms were a term used by the Portuguese poet Fernando Pessoa, who died in 1935. And I think he's the most fascinating case of pseudonym use in history. I don't think anyone even comes close, frankly. He had more than 70 different identities, and you know, they bickered and they clamored for attention and they trashed each other's work and they wrote in different genres and they had different physical characteristics. And he thought they were heteronyms because they were separate from him and he couldn't control their literary output or their ideology or anything else about them.
You almost get the feeling that Joyce Carol Oates is doing the same thing with her mystery writer, Nom de Plume. It's just a different person.
Yeah, I mean, I think she was quite disappointed when it came out that it was Rosamund Smith was Joyce Carol Oates, and now she's kind of resigned herself to those books come out now as Joyce Carol Oates writing as, so it's a transparent pseudonym.
Well, when did the use of pseudonyms change? We still have George Orwell, who's assumed a name in much the same spirit as the 19th century writers.
I think that, frankly, it really reached its peak in the 19th century. And I stopped my book in the mid 20th century because to me, Pauline Rayage is the last really interesting story to tell.
The story of O.
Yes.
Reiner.
Yeah.
But she had good reason to not use her real name.
Very good reason. You know, writing an S&M novel is you might want to think about that. But I think now with the internet and with manuscripts being submitted electronically and with people wanting fame and celebrity, I think it's a much harder endeavor and a very different one.
Well, now what we have instead is hoaxes, don't
yes.
we?
Yeah.
Like the J.T. Leroy hoax. That is not the same thing as a nom de plume?
I don't think so. I'm actually, to be honest, I'm not very interested in these stories. I mean, they're coming out all the time now and I've certainly followed them, but I think that, there's a difference in terms of literary merit and motive, and there's a difference between fraud and disguising your identity.
Now, why did George Orwell assume that name?
Well, he came from what he called a lower, upper middle class family, and he didn't want to embarrass his family by writing about tramps. And he also, I think, frankly, wanted some credibility. You know, he didn't want to be George Orwell, who had gone to Eton writing about the slums. You know, he wanted
and
to
down
seem
and out
authentic.
In Paris and London.
Exactly. He wanted to seem authentic. And also he was embarrassed by his first manuscript and he wasn't sure he wanted it to come out under his own name.
Well, Romain Gary was an established author by the time he began writing under a pseudonym.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite stories that I discovered while researching this book. He was a huge celebrity, and he had written the best-selling novel, French novel of the 20th century, and felt imprisoned by his fame and labeled as a writer. And he wanted to kind of break free of being marked as a certain kind of writer. And he became Emile Ajar, and unfortunately also became a hugely successful author and defined in a totally different way.
Now, is this something that started in the 19th century, or do we find people using nom de plume in ancient Greece or Rome or throughout European history?
Well, originally, of course, books were anonymous. There was no name attached to them. And then pseudonyms, Voltaire used lots of pseudonyms. It became a convention, and now I think it's just become something that's entirely different.
Well, you say in your author's description, your bio on the back of the book, that Carmela Ciuraru is not a pseudonym. You wanted to make that point.
Yeah.
So what got you thinking about this as a topic?
Well, it started as a magazine assignment. It was just this art magazine, and the theme was secrets. And the editor said, could you write about this in the context of literature? So, of course, I thought of pen names. But I had so much material, and it was such a short article that I wanted to keep going and turn it into a book. And then on another note, you know, I grew up with parents who were Romanian immigrants, and I grew up in a house that spoke three languages, and I never really felt one thing or the other in terms of my identity. And so I think I really related to the authors in this book in that sense of not considering identity anything that's fixed.
Carmela Chiraru, her book Nom de Plume, A Secret History of Pseudonyms, published by Harper. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.